Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
Howdy.
Is my audio working okay?
Seems like it.
Okay, good.
Yeah, you're good.
All right.
I can hear you on stream, too.
I updated to Windows 11, so...
Uh-oh. Yeah.
That wasn't a...
There's Windows Tim.
That is Windows 11.
What'd you say, Pernell?
It's like, I don't even know half the time. Is Windows 10 good? Is Windows 11 better? Like...
I don't know. Windows 11 is like brand new, so I
there
don't
we
know.
Go. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Can you hear us?
Now I can.
Yay!
I knew there was a problem when I didn't hear the ringer, and I was like, "Oh no!" I knew something would be wrong. Well, you know, I reinstalled everything this past weekend, so just settings needed to be set.
How's the new rig treating you?
So far so good. I haven't really done too much with it yet, other than just get everything set back up and or set up for the first time, as the case may be. Since I actually haven't had I haven't been running Windows with the Windows Store for years. So getting the Windows Store set up and Game Pass set up and then linked to the EA launcher, so I could start downloading games that I'm going to pretend like I'm going to have time to play. Let's be real.
That's how it always is.
It is, but it feels great to be like, you know, all right, now this shit's going to happen. And maybe it will. You know, it's at some point. I'm just waiting for some point where, like, I don't know, I break a leg or something like that, and I have to stay home for an extended period of time. And then I'm going to get all my shit in playing video games.
There you go.
It's going to happen sooner or later. I'm just too big and too active for me to not, like, freaking tear my ankle off at some point. And when I do, I will be ready.
Are you going to pull an Anderson or John Jones and rip your toe off?
I hope not. God, I thought you were going to say an Anderson Silva and get my freaking calf kicked.
Yeah, you could get your leg snapped in half if you want.
Ugh.
That's always fun too. Ugh. I'm keeping all this in the show, by the way. I don't.
Yeah, that's
this,
fine.
This
yeah,
episode is just whatever. Like,
well,
Tim's here. Chris is here.
We talk about video games.
Brunel's here.
Yeah.
It just is. This episode
it was good,
is.
You know, it felt good to put new hardware in the computer and then have it not work initially and then fight with it for 2 hours and then realize I just needed to put the graphics card into a different slot and then it would be perfectly happy. But I just went down too much of a rabbit hole trying to read the tea leaves of the debug lights on my new motherboard instead of just like sticking the thing in a different hole.
I had a hard enough time trying to figure out how the hell to access my BIOS menu so I could, like, enable that TMP2 or whatever the hell it is for Windows 11. It took me forever to get to the BIOS menu. It's like, reset your system and hold F2. So I did that. Didn't work. Like, okay, it might be delete. Try that. Nope, didn't work. It's like, how about F10? No. How many fucking keys am I? So I tried every, like, I'm just mashing every key on my keyboard and nothing is sending it to the BIOS menu. So I had to manually do it through the system restore menu, which was fun. But hey, I have Windows 11 now.
Yay? Question mark?
I don't know. We'll see. So far, yeah, it's pretty.
Yay!
I'm definitely going to wait until I get to bang around with that at work and ruin other computers before I put it on my own, but that's just how I roll.
Yeah, I figure why the hell not. My system can run it. It's been a long time since I've had something that was like top of the line. I don't want to say top of the line, but like middle of the line.
You got a Series X last year. Come on, that's
I'm talking PC wise.
Oh yeah, okay.
So now that I have something that's relatively new and powerful, I want to make the most of it and see what I could do with it.
All right, let me know.
Joe doesn't give a fuck anymore. This podcast is turning into a country music song.
Oh no! Don't say that. That's rude.
I don't know how to turn that into a country music song.
Well, I think I think that's the title of the episode, at least. A country music song.
Country. Yeah, I guess that's the title of the episode.
Whatever, who cares? Someone made a suggestion, I'll listen to it. Fucking whatever.
Yeah, that's how it is. Chris, how was your week?
Oh, pretty good. Just, you know, nothing too interesting going on.
You have nothing to contribute to this.
No.
Damn it. Did you get anything cool this week?
What?
Did you get anything new cool this week?
Oh, yeah, I started playing Metroid Dread, and
everyone is playing Metroid Dread but me.
I started and finished Metroid Dread.
Holy shit, already?
I'm like,
yes.
I'm like one of the three people on the internet so far that's like, I don't really like it.
Oh, but well, it sucks to be you.
Controversial. It sucks to be me with my Metroid Dread and like 10,000 other games.
Yeah.
For now, what about you? How's things going over there?
Same old, really. I have not gotten Metroid Dread yet. So, with me, I ordered it from a different website so I can get the limited edition one, which I didn't want originally, but then decided to because it's a scalper hot item. So I was like, well, shit, fuck those guys. I want one.
The art book is really nice that comes with it.
Well, I will be perusing that in a few days when it finally friggin' arrives, but I am interested in seeing what the hubbub is. Because Chris is not as alone in that dislike of the game as he thinks he is. I've seen a lot of people talk about how they dislike the game. And the thing about it is that, so people like to give crap to reviews and stuff like that. Or, like, I want to know what it's like for myself. I don't need a review. Screw that. But what I found funny was I was curious about how the game would be. So I read up on it while waiting for mine to show up. And every review I read mentioned the EMMI chases. They mentioned how rough they can be and how you kind of have to pick up on them and like learn their patterns and stuff. And like most of the people mentioned how many times they even had to redo it. Like one guy to the point of like, I was on one for 2 hours. Like,
wow.
But like they made it very clear and all of them like, this is not your typical Metroid. There are stealth and chase sequences that are harder than the SAX type stuff, right? So,
yes.
I'm not saying that's like the defined like statement that make up a game, but I feel like if I was looking for this stuff and then multiple sites said this is the case, I'd go, maybe I should rethink this game. This isn't what I expect Metroid to be. But what happened was all those people ignored reviews or was like, I don't need reviews to tell me what I want. I'm going to get it. And then they bought it. And then complain hardcore about how hard the game is and how they can't handle the EMMI chases and how they wish they never bought it. I'm like, well, there's a way around that.
I definitely recall a game where a friend of mine intentionally kept themselves in the dark about it. And then the game came out and they were like, oh man, I don't like the stuff they did. I'm like, yeah, if you'd read fucking anything, you would have known that, dude. Like,
there's nothing wrong with like getting info. You don't have to get your opinion, which some people for some reason do. Like, you don't have to get your opinion for it but like way, but you need to at least look up some info like, what the hell am I buying? What is this thing? Which makes you feel a little bit more informed about where your money and time will inevitably go.
Well, I own all the other Metroid games. That's why I bought it.
One thing I found funny, funny you say that, because I know one friend, Joe probably knows him too, who complained hardcore about the game. Hardcore. But he pirated it before it came out. Well, I mean, his defense, he did the whole before it came out thing. He wanted it now. Because it was available online days before it came out. So he played around with it. He was like, I hate this game. Like, this is stupid. I'm like, okay, well, stop playing it. I mean, it's not hard to just put it down, especially if you're not financially invested in it. So the person bought the game anyway, even though they spent all this time complaining about it. And they're still going to play the entire game complaining about the entire way through.
It's now like, I want to know who this is.
It's like, how do you not value your time more?
We'll talk about it offline. names.
But it's like, why don't you value your time more? I mean, you don't have to play this. You could go on YouTube and watch a playthrough just to get the story bits if you don't enjoy the game. But I don't understand people sometimes. And that was a thing that made me go, bullshit. Aside from that, I'm good.
I know, I was going to say, that was something that, yeah, I eventually had to kind of come to terms with and learn. And I was thinking about this just the other day, so it's funny you brought it up, how, like, back, like, 10-ish years ago, like, if I bought a game or got my hands on a game in any way, like, I would feel an obligation to finish it, even if I wasn't enjoying it at all. So, like, heyday, like, 360 era stuff. Like, if I bought something on Xbox Live Arcade, it'd be like, well, I bought it. I'm not having a great time, but I'm going to finish it. Or it's like, I bought this game, you know, on sale, and I'm not liking it, but I'm going to finish it. Like, I got to finish it through to see the whole thing.
Spite playing.
Yeah, not even, it's just like, Kingdom Hearts 2 is a good example of that. I'm just like, I'm not liking this game, but here I am, like, slogging through it just to see the Tron parts.
and they were the shortest damn part of the game.
And they were great. River. They were the best part, but not worth playing the whole game. I always think about that game, and I'm like, man, that could have been me playing Suikoden 5 all the way through instead of that falling through the cracks. Anyways, yeah, but nowadays it's just like, if a game isn't really grabbing me, like, I'm fucking done. Like, I'm done with it, like, so fast. Like, no. Money be damned. Like, I cannot spend my time with the amount of games that are available these days and the amount of time that I have to play them, like, sitting there playing something that is, you know, not doing it for me, you know?
You hear to that.
Now I don't finish the games I love on purpose.
Yeah. I do have another question regarding Metroid, though. I want to do it before I forget and we move on. Sure. You know, Joe was preparing that segue. You know he was.
What segue?
So, you know what I'm talking about.
No, anyway. I'm still thinking here how I'm going to segue back to, if you don't want your Metroid Dread Special Edition, let me know, because I really want it. And you're like, oh, so I don't really want it. I just want it because scalpers have it. So if you don't want it, I would buy it from you.
Well, I already bought it, so why would I sell it to someone else? It's mine now.
Because you didn't want it.
Yeah, you crack open that LED switch yet?
Yep, it's sitting on the table. The problem I'm having with it right now, and this is something that Joe would probably understand, is I'm going to make that my primary console for account, but I also have a European account and an Australian account.
Yeah.
And those two, I'm not quite sure how I'm going to do it, so I'm kind of in a bind with the full transition, but yeah, I'm going to ultimately use that.
You had a question about Metroid.
Yes. Well, more of an opposite thought to wonder what you guys think of it. So, a lot of people have complained about the whole thing being, you know, this doesn't feel like Metroid, you know, such and such and such, right? Because the chase is and all that. And it's more action-y. And one thought I had was, whether or not I end up liking or disliking what this game became, I don't particularly fault them going in a different direction to work with it, because one thing about Metroid that came to mind for me is that Metroid Fusion came out in 2003. Metroid Dread came out in 2021. That's a lot of time. And in that window of time, everybody and their grandma was aping the Metroid formula, the Metroidvania formula, and we've had tons of games that pretty much play like Metroid but aren't Metroid. So I could see a developer being like, if we just release another Metroid right now, people are going to look at us as a franchise that hasn't changed in like almost 20 years. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? We don't know. So maybe some of the changes they were working with, like, how do we differentiate ourselves from the guys who have come along to imitate us? And whether it turned out to be for the better or worse, I don't know. But I do believe that was possibly where they were coming from with these like changes to the formula. What do you guys think about that?
I think the next Animal Crossing should have you like running into a tarantula instead of villagers every time, and like so every 19 seconds you have to see the loading screen again, because they can't be repeating that formula again. That's not what Nintendo would do.
Tarantula Quest.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty
cool. No more villagers in Animal Crossing. No more like farming or any, you know, not farming, but you know, like planting trees and stuff. No, it's just survival tarantulas.
I'm just laughing at the idea, like survival Animal Crossing. Which after that one island where you kind of run around in the maze, can almost see that being tweaked into a survival Animal Crossing. Like you're trying to survive in this den of deceit.
Makes the title like really, really sinister. Animal Crossing. You don't want to cross these animals.
Don't cross alone. Bring a friend. Get online. Survive together.
No, I'm going to keep playing the game because I think, you know, once maybe I get powerful, then it might pick up or something. I'm not dismissing it. I'm just saying.
How far are you?
Just got the spazer. So 3 hours in?
Yeah, I think business might start to pick up a bit more.
Business will boom there. Yeah.
I mean, I got my complaints and also actually a lot of praise about the game, too. I'm not just, like, complaining about it. There's a lot of great stuff in that game, too. But Nintendo did not send it to me to review, so I'm not going to review it on this podcast.
In your face, Minty.
I was
Joe,
say
is that
to
a
your,
segue?
To your, it no, really it's not. Is. To your question. let me just stop you right there. To your question, Purnell, allegedly, if it is to be believed, they had the idea for Metroid Dread like 20 years ago, but they didn't have the technology to make it. So what I'm assuming is the idea was to implement, you know, this kind of persistent threat that is sort of like, you know, your Mr. X or your nemesis from the Resident Evil games, where you go into a certain area and they're just like chasing and hunting you, but maybe they just couldn't program the AI satisfactorily at the time. So now, you know, they kind of sent out Samus Returns, the remake, to, you know, I think it was out there to test the waters of both the market and Mercury Steam's ability to make a Metroid game, which that game is okay. I think that's a very okay Metroid game. I didn't love it that much, but then there, you know, once that was successful enough, they were like, okay, we're cutting you loose. Here's the thing, make it go. And they did. And I, you know, outside of the Emmy chase sections, which can be demanding, like, basically, I think the movement and controls in this game are really good. I really like moving around as Samus. So, I know. I think, you know, the Emmy sequences are meant to kind of leverage that. And it's jarring for some people that have only, like, kind of seen Metroid movement like that in speedruns to suddenly be like, no, you have to, like, work a little harder and a little faster than you're used to in the past, and not just like during the escape sequence at the end of the game, like you got a motor. But I feel like the controls are up to it. And yeah, I've seen people kind of, I saw somebody say they spent 6 hours grinding the last boss. It took me about 40 minutes, but it is demanding. I will say that.
I wanted to ask this. It's not a spoiler either, really. It's just an experience explanation. So, I heard that the boss is a multi-form something.
Yes.
And the way I was hearing the description
welcome
worked
to bosses that in video games, they have more than one form.
Well, it's not just that point, mind you. It was the idea that it kind of plays out almost like a Ninja Gaiden boss, where like you get a chance at it. If you can't beat one form, you die, and you go back to whatever checkpoint they establish. You got to do the whole thing again. But if you're able to beat that form, if you come back to the boss, you're on the next form immediately, or do you have to do all three?
No, you got to run the whole thing. Well, you got to run the whole thing from the top.
Get good.
So get good. Well, you know, I'm already prepped to get good. I ain't concerned. It's just general observation inquiry, because I know people that will get to that and be like, oh, this is some bullshit. I'm like, that's the game, baby. No,
I thought it was a great fight that like really made you use your abilities.
Well, and don't talk about it too much, because
I'm not going to talk about it that much. I'm just saying from a gameplay standpoint, like it makes you use, like, you get a lot of abilities. What I appreciate is that, you know, a lot of Metroid bosses in the past are just like spam missiles in the thing's face or weak point, which, you know, might be the same thing. But this has boss fights that make you utilize, you know, other abilities, and I felt as though the last boss in particular was making me really pull, you know, all the tricks out of my hat in order to get through, and it felt really good because of that. And I'm, yeah.
And then use everything you learned to pull it off.
Yeah, like you're using pretty much your whole bag of tricks, or maybe, I guess, if you're having trouble, maybe you should be using more tricks than you have, than you think you should be using to get through it. But,
well, I definitely support that kind of thing.
Yeah, I was really happy with it. I feel like they made big improvements over Samus Returns, and they made an awesome Metroid game that I had a lot of fun with and couldn't put down. That's why I'm already done with it.
Cool. So $59.99. What do you think?
Yeah, I think absolutely 100%. They didn't send it to me to review, but
quote Rick and Morty, "Hey Nintendo, send us free stuff."
Oh God, I wish. I've been trying to get anything from Nintendo for years, but nope.
Eventually they'll crack.
One day. Them and Sony, I'm hoping one day, but we shit talk Sony a lot, so I don't ever.
Excuse me,
that.
Don't say we, Joseph.
I.
Joe shit talk Sony a lot.
Actually, Cole was the big hater.
Okay, yeah, both of you, yeah.
Of Sony. Yes, like, I at least own Sony products. I hate their quality because they fall apart easily, like my fucking headphones that are peeling apart after 3 months. But
well, I do. I personally believe if you invest in some of the products, you can totally talk the shit. Like, I'll talk shit about the Vita, but I also own more Vita games than most people I know. So I am entitled to have that dialogue. If they don't like it, fix the fucking Vita. I don't know what else to say.
I don't think they're fixing the Vita at this point, man.
Oh, I know, which means I can talk about it forever.
Yeah, I think the Vita 2, maybe.
Oh, there's a Vita 2. I'm not buying it. They've lost their chance. The Nintendo LED pretty much said, hey, this is what the Vita could have been.
There's a Vita 2 that Purnell will purchase one just in case he wants it. He will definitely buy it and then figure it out later.
Yeah, not this time. I had to be stern about it with that because I was 100%. Really livid about that. I was really stirred and angry about the Vita. Like, you have
how
no
many Vita
idea.
Games do you got?
No, I have a lot because I support it while I had it, but I was pissed with how they treated the product. Like,
okay.
It deserved more love than it got.
That's
it. And did. Yes. It did. It yeah, really did.
Very fair. Yeah, they kind of just put it out and then
forgot like, about okay, it. They'd sent it out like, to pasture.
They were like, it's not an instant success. Well, fuck it. We're just going to abandon it.
I wonder if they wouldn't have put more into it if Microsoft hadn't shot themselves in the foot so severely at the beginning of the last generation. It's like, you know, just with the foibles of the price tag and the Kinect and all that crap that happened that eventually, you know, became memory of distant past. If Sony weren't like, oh crap, we have major opportunity here. Let's go on the PS4 and forget about the fucking Vita, you know?
The Vita had so much potential and they just gave up on it.
Yeah. It's like, as a lot of people say, it's like the Switch is kind of the Vita too, in that, like, okay, you know, with the exception of obviously having first party Nintendo, but it's just like, yeah, it's a great portable indie game system that's exactly what the Vita was.
Lugga in chat says, fix the Vita, just release a Metal Gear Acid 3, boom, solved. Why not just do that on the Switch?
On the Switch, yeah, that can still happen.
And just do the cardboard 3D bullshit that they did in the second game. You remember that?
You gotta believe, but most important, buy it.
Switch. Anyway, review. Should we get to reviews?
Yes, you may now transition.
Okay. First game to talk about tonight is Astria Ascending, developed by Artisan Studios, published by Dear Villagers, released September 30th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $39.99. As one of the Fated Eight, explore the world of Orcanon, where 12 ancient beasts dwell and fight against your destiny to save the world in this hand-drawn, turn-based RPG. Purnell and Chris, both of you check this one out. Purnell, how about you start? Tell us, what is Astria Ascending?
So Astria Ascending is an interesting little product in that it showed me the importance of certain aspects of like RPG tropes, and it fell short in some ways, but is awesome in enough ways that I'm like, I still like it. So the idea of this game is that, like Joe mentioned, there's this group called the Fated Eight. They are a group of people that are not, I'll say people because all the races count in that umbrella, they become what are called demigods in this world, which are basically magic imbued warriors that are meant to protect the world from like an oncoming threat. But the trade-off for them getting this ability and power is that they die in 3 years. So they get shortened lives for the sake of fulfilling an obligation to make their world a better place. Pretty shit deal, but hey, power, baby. So the idea behind this game, and the thing that I was referring to about the RPG trope thing, is that they start you off at like the last couple of months of their 3-year cycle. All of them are together, and they all have formed bonds and relationships, dialogue.
Most of them kind of toxic.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I'm listening to these guys talk to each other, and I'm like, one, I'm not the most vested because they're already talking like they know each other and they have these established connections. They bring up like systemic racism in the speciesism in this case.
Speciesism.
And I have no context behind it, so I can't. I'm like, I'm clearly it's inferred, but I'm like, but I need more understanding of this. The most you get is the intro where it's like, oh, the bird people like being birds, and the wing people, as it's more like the Windians live in Windia, and the Aquosians live in Aquosia. Like, I'm making up the names of the towns, but it's literally that on the nose for like the population and the place they live.
Like, I don't want to throw out a negative about the game so quick, but it just, beginning felt very pretentious.
Yeah. It really did.
It felt very artsy fartsy, like we're super artsy with.
And it man, felt like
about what I have to talk about.
Yeah. And it and it felt like, you know, kind of like cracking open like about the time I stopped reading like fantasy novels and stuff is like when you crack it open and like they begin like by explaining like the world and like just world building, but like they just throw out all these like made up words. I mean, I know all words are made up, but you know, like names of people that are, and tribes and stuff, and it's just all apostrophes and vowels, and
it becomes a word salad. You're like, I'm not going to bother. It's like also like how I'm with anime at times, where like it'll be an anime I'm watching, it's like a bunch of names and like communities and stuff, and then so I'm like, the guy with the glasses, he's strong. Oh, and the lady with the lick, yeah, she's awesome. Like I don't know anybody's names. I just know who.
It took me a long time in this game to figure out that there was a second human in my group.
Oh, damn.
That knight dude who doesn't say anything really.
He's a goddess kiss up.
Yeah,
he's, but he has poison hit, so that's cool.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, it's I hate saying that one of the selling points of the game is meet an unforgettable cast of characters, and I can't remember any of the characters. Like, none of them, they were all forgettable to me because they were all thrown at me at the same time.
Exactly. Now, admittedly, over time, they can build, but as we already know, and as Tim mentioned earlier in the preamble, sometimes you kind of need that buildup. And if you get thrown into it immediately with that sort of like, you're like, well, I'm done. I'm going to move on to something else. And I can see a lot of people doing that with this game. However, we've done a lot of trashing. I got a few delicious to come up with too here.
Yeah, so, there's a lot of good to say about the game. I feel bad like starting off with negatives because there is a lot of positive to say about the game, including the visuals, which are just jaw dropping.
Mm-hmm. Like this, my dialogue on this is going to be a bit of a wave effect, but I think it's serviceable. So like, good. That freaking the exploration and the battle systems are fucking solid. The exploration is 2D dungeon exploration. It harkens back to what you would have experienced in something like Valkyrie Profile. Many people listening to the show are too young for that game, but I'm old, so fuck it. So you get to move around, do jumps left to right, and you eventually, well, very quickly, get an item called an energy ring. And the energy ring can be used to fire a beam that can freeze enemies and also activate switches. But as you progress, you'll also gain additional abilities that you can rotate through that will do different dungeon puzzle solvey things. Enemies on the map, however, if you don't feel like freezing them, or you do, you can engage them either by a swipe of your sword or just by running into them like a fool. Don't do that. Slash them, because you'll get a preemptive strike potentially if you do. You'll go into battle. It's turn-based, party member at a time. Unfortunately, there's no turn order that you can see, so you kind of have to gauge based on speed who's going to go and win. Roll the dice, baby. But interesting things about this battle system. One, you get all eight characters available to you at once. That's one positive to that, because you can switch your party members on the dime. The only cost is that you'll lose the turn of the person who does the switching. And all the party members have abilities that play fairly differently from each other. And that's just their starting classes. You'll eventually get more classes that you can learn that differentiates them. And then subclasses, which will give you a portion of that class's abilities, but not all of them. And then a support class is just like a few base abilities. You'll be doing a lot of rotating too, because the battles in this game are fucking hard. I'm not going to mince words here. I mean, I'll acknowledge though, there is a difficulty slider. You can choose easy, normal, hard, and I played on normal. So if one of you guys chose easy, you can dialogue on that aspect. But normal's hard. It's pretty tough.
Yeah, a lot of enemies are just straight up invincible towards most of what certain characters can throw at them. So, like elements and physical attacks.
Mm-hmm. And this is where it gets weird too, because so initially I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to just sit here and just throw a bunch of skills at these guys to learn their weaknesses. I need to get an ability for. So I immediately went to my skill tree, which I'll talk about in a second, to see if anybody could learn a scan ability, and one character does. So I spent a bunch of skill points to learn scan, and then I learned there's an accessibility window or screen, which you can switch dials and tweak stuff. And on that accessibility screen, there's the option to just see enemy weaknesses. You can just turn that shit on,
yep.
Which makes scan worthless. It's like, okay, so now I'm conflicted. Do I keep scan and turn that off because that is like the gameplay flow of sorts where it's like you're supposed to scan to know? Or do I not do that because using scan when I have the access to the actual menu option kind of wastes my time? So it's a weird toss up there, but it was
depends cool on how you want to invest yourself in the game. If you want to invest it in a more accessible way and speed things up, or if you wanted to play it the way it was intended to be played and earn the scan ability, which you did.
And the funny thing is I bought scan, but then I was like, you know, but I don't feel like doing this for every enemy. So I was like, I'm going to turn it on because fuck it. Game's hard enough, because I'm going to tell you, like early on, there's a boss that you fight who does an attack that hits everybody in the party, and it confuses all of them. It confuses everybody. And if they are confused, any attack they do to each other is going to kill them. One hit kills straight up. I've never had a turn where I did not kill the person. So jeez. I had a ring that I found in a chest in one of the dungeons that nullified confuse. It's the only one I had. So I had to selectively choose who got it and then roll the dice to hope that the right people weren't confused in that boss fight when he did the attack. And had to speed through the battle to win it. How did I speed through the battle to win it? Because of focus, another gameplay aspect. And then I'll stop rambling and you guys can talk more about the game. focus is a ability that you can use. It's like they're basically like points up on the corner, numerically build up. You get them if you hit weaknesses, but you lose them if you hit resistances. And you can spend these points to increase the power of your attacks up to 200%. So if you hit a guy's weakness with a strong spell at 200%, oh, you're going to chip at that shit. And I pretty much milked it for all it was worth and just basically did a battle of attrition to win the battle. Fun, but brutal, but fun. You guys.
Chris, tell us about your time with the game.
Oh, hi. It's me. It's me, Chris.
Hi, remember me?
No, it's okay. Yeah, so, yeah, definitely for one, I was like, you know, I have to echo Purnell's sentiment that I was blown away by how pretty this game is. It is so pretty. Just, like, look at screenshots of it and be like, wow. It almost, like, feels like... like what Vanillaware is going for in like most of their stuff, but I actually think they kind of surpassed them in that. In fact, I had to check and be like, "Is this isn't Vanillaware, is it?" but it's not. I actually kind of dig that the because of the 2D side-scrolling nature of the game, like you know, it's not like walking around on a world map kind of deal. I do kind of appreciate that they give you some platforming, and it actually, you know, the dungeons themselves act a little bit like a Metroidvania, which is kind of cool. So, you know, we got... it's more Metroid than Dread. Oh, no, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. That's dumb. But yeah, it's really, like, it's funny, like, how conflicted I am about, like, how great the environment and the, like... external factors are in this game when the internal factors are so uncharming. That is to say, your cast of 8 characters that honestly, when I started, and this is what I was going to say about that, it's not really a complaint, but I just an observation is that when they introduced all these characters, I was, and they're like, and everybody's going to die within like whatever amount of time, I was like, oh, okay, so what it is that all like 7 of these characters are going to die except for like my one character who somehow lives on, and that's what the plot's going to be. And then as I continued through the game, nobody died, and I was like, oh, these are my characters.
For good.
Realizing that within like a couple of hours into a game, I was like, oh, okay, I better take this seriously. But then, no, like, mechanically, it's actually pretty cool. Like, I like the classes and subclasses. It reminds me of Etrian Odyssey. I like the idea of, like, you know, just really wanting to see what's around the next corner. Like, that's a little bit like, to me, that's like Octopath Traveler, which, of course, some of the people that worked on this game worked on Octopath Traveler. You know, it's got, some Octopath personnel and some Final Fantasy personnel worked on this game, even though the developer itself is Canadian. But yeah, like, so many like great factors came in, and it's just like, the one thing you could have worked on really is just make the character interactions more compelling. Like, it was funny for me to like see one of the characters eventually be like, hey, do we really need to argue this much? We're only going to be alive for like 90 more days. like the characters themselves had to kind of say it, huh? But, and also, by the way, you know, I really love the types of characters. Like, the different races are extremely different. Like, you know, the dragon folks and like these big old like ox like lion people, I don't know, just like big barely muscly dudes, and then like the little fish guys and like their little, like, you know, fishbowl heads, you know. And so, yeah, I liked all of that, and I like, there's so much to like about this game, and it's just like the one thing keeping it from being just like a 100% winner is just like these little things that you kind of wonder why they seem so overlooked. And that's, you know, but then again, like, again, considering that this is coming from like a place of like Octopath Traveler, it had that same problem. It's like you had eight characters and they didn't really get along with each other. It was just like eight separate stories that just kind of got glued together and into an, you know, eight story game. So in that sense, it's that's just what it is. It's like, you're not really too concerned about these characters. It's all about you. You're the person that this game is about. So you get to go around and experience all this good stuff. And don't care about these guys. They're going to be dead before their warranties expired anyway.
Damn.
Before the store warranty expires.
Well, Astria Ascending is available for $40. What do the two of you think?
I'll admit, I think it's a solid try just for the battle and exploration systems alone, and not to mention the class and skill node access, because that's pretty awesome too. It's just, you got to deal with the difficulty to get engaged with the characters and narrative, but it's fun to get into if you're down with that stuff.
I'm actually going to go a little higher, and I'm going to say buy it. As a fan of games like Etrian Odyssey, which feature characters that have no personality or even dialogue, I mean, sometimes the engine runs and the paint looks good. I mean, it's a game. It's a
runs and the paint looks good.
It's a worthy game.
That is the best I've heard in a while for a description. It runs.
Well, if people are on the fence about it, the best part about this one, it's available on Game Pass.
Yeah,
Xbox Game Pass. Woo!
But come on, $40 for this thing, I think, is fair. If it was $60, I would also say try it. But I think this is a solid $40 RPG. I mean, God, it's a work of art if you look at it.
It's very pretty.
And listen to it, actually. The music's also great.
Cool. All right. Next game to talk about is Neo Geo Pocket Color Selection Volume 1, developed by SNK Corporation and Code Mystics, published by SNK Corporation, released September 29th on Steam for $39.99. Retro game fans, rejoice! Neo Geo Pocket Color Selection Volume 1 Steam Edition is SNK's legendary handheld console Dream Collection, containing 10 handheld-defining classics coming to Steam. Tim, tell us about Neo Geo Pocket Collection, or Pocket Color Selection, Volume 1.
Yeah, not collection, it's a selection.
Yes.
Not to be confused with a collection. They selected these. They didn't collect them. There was a lineup, and then they picked them out like it was dodgeball in high school or whatever. Man, let's play dodgeball in high school because we'd kill each other. So what you got here is a collection of 10 games from the good old Neo Geo Pocket / Neo Geo Pocket Color, which was a turn of the century handheld game system there. I reviewed SNK versus Capcom Match of the Millennium, which was also a Neo Geo Pocket game, which was released separately as a standalone a few months ago, and thus is not part of this collection. What does this collection have? Well, it has some fighting games for you. It's got a Samurai Showdown 2, a Last Blade, and Gals Fighters, King of Fighters, and a Fatal Fury. And it has two Metal Slugs, Metal Slug First and Second Mission, a golf game, and Dark Arms? I didn't actually write them down. which is a I believe it's Dark Arms. That is a kind of overhead action adventure shooter type deal.
Yeah, Dark Arms Beast Buster 1999.
Yeah, it is billed as an action RPG in the game itself, but that might be a bit of an exaggeration, I think. But I, you know, whatever. What are genre definitions? Who knows? yeah, so you get a lot of fighters, you get a couple shooters, you get there's a puzzle game about painting the ground.
Crush Roller?
Yeah, that's it. Yes, yeah, Crush Roller. Which is a weird one. So yeah, in that game, that's kind of like a Pac-Man maze chase game, and that you are a paintbrush, and you have to paint the ground of this maze, and you have to paint once you've painted every square pixel of it, then you move on to the next level. And I say pixel because I definitely thought I had painted every single corner of a maze, and I'm like, what the hell am I missing? And so there's like little side warps, shortcuts on the sides, like in, you know, like in a Pac-Man maze. And if you don't go through those, you won't get every pixel on a level, and it's really hard to see that. But yeah, that's a neat little game, a neat little variation on that. The golf game, you know, Pocket Turf Masters is pretty cool. You know, the most recent golf game I played was Mario Golf, which, I mean, the Mario Golf games have their formula, and they kind of make it super easy to golf because you line up your shot, you can literally look where the ball is going to land and figure that out, and they give you all these tools to make a good shot. And this is a game from 20 years ago, and it's not really having so much of that shit, which makes it like a little more fair, in my opinion, when you're just like kind of picking the direction the ball is going to go, and it's giving you a little bit less information. My main beef with that is that every time, you pick your club, you line up your shot, you make your shot, and then it kind of shows you where it landed and then moves you on to the next shot, like the music loop resets, and it's super annoying. The Metal Slug games are, you know, they're obviously not as lavishly animated as their arcade or console counterparts, but they are solid little run and gun shooter games. The first mission, the first one, takes pretty directly, I felt, off of Metal Slug 1, and so much as like the music is, you know, little is a demake version of the music from Metal Slug 1. Metal Slug the second one goes in. It didn't feel like it was obviously cribbing off of any of the grown up Metal Slugs, I guess. And felt like it was being a little bit more original with its level design. Both of them like to stick in vehicle levels more than the arcade Metal Slugs, but they're cool, and they you know, they're solid. And then you got a bunch of fighting games, because you know that's what SNK that's a lot of what SNK did back in the day. And they are
actually surprised that it's kind of like half and half with this. There's two Metal Slugs, the Dark Arms, Crush Roller, Big Tournament Golf, and then the fighting game.
And then five fighting games.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess they didn't, you know, taking out the versus game, and then you kind of pick one from each series, I guess. Yeah, I don't know exactly how many made them. I don't have a vast knowledge of the Neo Geo Pocket and what games were released for it. But yeah, you kind of get one that hits every series plus the Gal Fighters. King of Fighters is kind of silly because, you know, King of Fighters is a game built on, you know, picking your team and having this huge roster, and there's like 12 characters in it. none of those games have more than like 12 characters, and they all there's definitely a similar, I mean, the Neo Geo Pocket fighting game character style is a, you know, recognizable style, and they all follow it, just kind of the way the characters are drawn with emphasized heads and hands and feet to make them pop out on the screen with smaller bodies. And they all follow that art style, and they all feel pretty similar, albeit with some mechanical differences to account for them, you know, being in different game series. I feel like Fatal Fury plays the best of the lot, perhaps the most straightforward of them, but it felt pretty good. I mean, like, Ezogay vs. Capcom is the best fighting game on that system, and there's probably a reason why they broke it out to sell it separately. But none of them are, you know, bad. They're all pretty solid. It's a pretty solid formula that they went with on that system. And generally speaking, just like seeing this swath of games and thinking about how, like, man, these were on a portable in like the year 1999. Like, that, it's pretty good. Like, they're pretty darn good looking games for being on a pre Game Boy Advance portable system. But aside from, you know, the games themselves, the bells and whistles of the collection, of which there are not like a ton, you can pull up a virtual model of the box that the game came in and open the box and pull out the cartridge and then open the little plastic case that the cartridge came in and then pull the cartridge out and then look at it.
That's
a neat little thing.
That's nifty. I like dumb things like that. That's cute.
Yeah. It has scans of the manuals. And that's how you learn how to play those games. You look at the manuals and you have to zoom in on them. You get English and Japanese versions of the games. You can play them in color or black and white, because there's color or black and white. There's zoom, you know, different filters and zoom options and skin options for the display. The game ran windowed on my PC. It didn't even by default, I guess I should say, you know, it runs windowed, but then you can make it full screen and stretch it out as, you know, it may please you. But these are very small resolution games being played on very high resolution screens. And it also has a rewind function, so you can just rewind your gameplay if you fuck it up.
Yay.
Always a nice function that I like seeing in more of these modern collections.
I love the function. I rarely use it. I never find myself, like, the new Castlevania collection that came out has rewind. And I'll get hit, and I'll be like, ah, fuck it, I could take another hit. Why rewind now? Because I'll just end up rewinding constantly.
Yeah, like, once you cross that bridge, like, you just keep doing it.
Yeah.
And then it's just, because then you're like, well, if I rewound it for that, why aren't I rewinding it for this? And then you're just trying to get a perfect run through the game, and it's a slippery slope. I suppose sometimes when it's like, you just really got to control yourself and be like, okay, it's, you know, that was the last hit of that boss and that was bullshit, so I'm gonna rewind it just so we're not double killing each other, I guess, you know. Yeah, something like that.
$40 on this collection, 10 games, it comes out to like $4 a game. What do you think?
Sounds a $4 a game. Yeah, I think it's not something that I think, you know, classic game enthusiasts are going to dig, but for those people, you know, I think it's worth it. I think it's great to have these games available in a legitimate way to play and mess around with. It's just another, it's tough to go wrong with collections a lot of the time, unless they really screw the pooch on them.
And it's cool seeing hard to find retro games available for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely better than like trying to get them carts on eBay. Yeah. In fact, I think this is cheaper than one cart. So it's a steal.
Oh, there you go. Speaking of retro games, next one to talk about is Glaylancer, developed by Shinyuden and Messiah Games, published by Rattlake Games, released October 15th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $6.99. An epic adventure across the stars to save her father. Chris, who was her?
Who was her? I forgot her name. How dare you? 1 second. Lucia. Her name is Lucia. I guess I can't remember the name, the like last name, but and it's not on Wikipedia. Anyway,
well, you got to save a father. So how'd that go?
Oh, it's good. He's good now. He's in his chair. The thermostat has not been touched. Okay. Anyways,
how's the game?
All right, Glaylancer is so. This is a very famously like. Well, I guess it was high quality of a horizontal shmup on the Mega Drive in Japan only back in the day, 1992 to be precise. But actually looking at it, I was like, oh, it actually didn't get very good reviews when it came out. Probably because it's like impossibly hard. It is so, so hard. So after, you know, 29 years of it remaining there with. Actually, one time it did come out on the virtual console, I think in America, rip to the original Wii virtual console.
I think I have it on there.
Yeah, it came out and, you know, it's still in Japanese, the Japanese language that they speak and write in Japan. And so, you know, I don't think it ever had an official English release until this one. And so, yeah, now we have Advanced Buster Hawk Glaylancer in English on the Switch, which is great. So, yeah.
And it's on everything, too, not just the Switch.
Oh, yeah. Everything.
That's the best part.
So, the cool thing is, like, so the game itself, we'll talk about the game itself. The game itself is a side-scrolling shooter where basically at the beginning of it, you get to choose like your starting speed and also what, so you get two sub weapons on top of your regular pew pew shooter. And, those are changed in the game through power ups. So like there's the tiny laser that's also very powerful. There's the spread shot that's not super powerful, but you know, and there's like, you know, the short range flamethrower, if you like. And, you know, a variety of like different weapons. Now, the thing that you choose at the top of the game is how those little option ships behave. So you could have them be in like a normal setting where they fire basically wherever you input the controller. So if you are like advancing forward, they'll start shooting forward. If you go backwards, they'll start shooting backwards up and down. You can have them fixed. You can have them rotating. But you only choose it once, and then, you know, that's your choice. So, you know, if you want to, like, try and get all the enemies on the screen with, like, flamethrowers, you can have spinning flamethrowers around your, around your ship at all times. That's no problem. Now, again, this game is pretty merciless. It's, you know, bullets are not huge and fluffy like in, you know, a bullet hell, but they're also not, like, impossible to see or anything, but there's a lot of them, especially from bosses. And you also have to worry about, like, flying debris and stuff like that. And it's, of course, one hit and you're dead. And death takes you back to a checkpoint. So you don't get to just rich kid strat your way through this one. That's the game as it originally was. It has, 7 levels? I think. Oh, actually, no, it's like 11 levels. Yeah. So it's like 11 stages. Before, you know, you get to the end of it, if you even do, and then you have like other difficulty options after that. So including a maniac mode, which is I've not unlocked, so I can't tell you what it is, but I bet you it's just as advertised. So that's the game, and that game is available in this collection under vintage mode, completely untouched, not even translated. It's exactly one for one the game that you're presumably used to, I guess, if you played this on emulators forever. Now, here's the great part. Here is what they have brought to this to the table for releasing Glaylancer in English. They have modern mode. So one, modern mode completely translated in English, and what really well too. There's no all your base in this one. This is actually it tells the story, it tells it well. and it also presents, you know, the classic gameplay exactly. However, now you can, the one thing in the vintage mode, you could actually already adjust your speed, but it was one of those things where it's like, it goes up to 4 and then back down to 1. So it's like you're moving it back and forth. So if you want to go from like 2 to 1, you have to push the button like 5 times. Like, that's kind of how it went. Well, in this one, you can now use like the shoulder buttons to like just toggle it back and forth at will. But that's not it. You can also freely choose.
That's not all.
This is going to be a very, that's not all. Cause they packed a lot of good stuff in here. You can now freely choose any time in the fight what behavior you want your sub weapons to do. So if you want them to go from spinning around to being like normal mode, then, you know, just keep pushing the button until it cycles back around to that. Unfortunately, it happens in a cycle, so sometimes you will be like sitting here dodging bullets and like, oh, which one is the turning it around and stuff, and like, you know, then you get distracted and get shot, go boom. However, if you want to make it even easier for yourself, if you have the settings of the weapons on one of them where it's depending on your input, you know, like I mentioned at first, the normal mode where, you know, you push the button to go forward and the gun starts shooting forward. If you have one of those activated at the time, you could just use that right stick and make it a twin stick shooter. You can then control them at will. Yeah, you could just aim them wherever. It's fantastic.
You have actually, Carnage's attention.
Yeah, it turns it like into like a whole different kind of game and much more playable. It also saves your high score, and if you unlock Mania mode, blah blah blah. Okay, and then they even added in Cheater mode, which they recommend that you actually play the game first. But if you don't want to do that, turn on Cheater mode. You can toggle invincibility and a debug menu and just have all kinds of like wacky fun with that. So yeah, it's got like, you know, every button is toggleable, you know, like it's remappable, and like you've got, of course, the different displays, wallpaper, and shaders. However, I will say that, like, if you are a fan of, like, CRT mode, etc., it gives you, like, 8 different parameters that you can slide around, like mask type, intensity, sharpness, curvature, trinicurve. You know, it gives you, like, yeah, they give you, like, the whole, you basically can build a TV around this game.
So it's a TV simulator.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, vintage mode and, like, the one thing in vintage mode that you do get, because it's in the game menu, not the game itself, is you do get to use save states. So if you want to get through vintage mode with save states, you totally can. However, modern mode, and I assume cheater mode, I actually didn't try, you can just push that old left shoulder button to rewind. And you can even set the speed of the rewind. So if you want to rewind yourself through all 11 stages just to see the honestly pretty cute story, it's pretty nice. It's like, it's nice and kind of self-contained. You only get like cutscenes every like 3 levels, but I really like them because they're like Phantasy Star 4, like, you know, looks like an anime comic book. I know that's a manga, but you know what I mean. No. Like it's a still shot of a 16-bit anime, like. And it's really cool and like kind of intense, like, and yeah, all that to say, you know, the vintage mode, that's great. The game's out and you can play it exactly as it was. But man, this modern mode turns this game into like from being like, you know, a classic to like just an irresistible new game. So I'm very, very impressed with this. I think they saw M2 and they were like, oh, we can do that.
Well, it's only $7. So what's your verdict?
Jeez, try and figure out some way to buy it like 2 or 3 times, please. They'll keep doing this. Don't just buy it once, like for real. But yes,
buy it on multiple platforms.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and shout out to Rataleika for going the extra mile with this one.
Yeah, they really, yeah. I'm not sure how much of that they controlled. You mentioned a developer too, so. But whatever. I mean, whoever is responsible for this, you did a fantastic job, and I really, really hope you bring more games over like this, so.
Cool. All right. Next game to talk about is The Plane Effect, developed by Innovina Studio Kiku, published by P-Cube Limited, released September 23rd on Xbox Series X and S, Switch, PS5, and PC for $14.99. A dystopian isometric adventure following a lonely office worker as he attempts to return home in the face of impossible odds. Experience a remarkable journey expertly brought to life with gorgeous visuals crafted and tailored by VFX experts. Tim, tell us about your time with the plane effect.
A lot of questions about, like, how this man got to work, how he gets home every other night. Like, why is the world trying to kill him so bad? I just don't understand, man. So, yeah, you got this. This is a dystopian adventure puzzle-y type game. And what this game nails is kind of its art style is great. Like, it just... it's very dark and well drawn and moody and really hits kind of the dark oppression of the world very well. So it's cool to look at, and it's interesting to see things that go on in it. So you navigate the world. It's you know, telling you its story through its environment, kind of through the things that occur along the way, with like kind of some random artsy non sequitur type deals that don't always make a lot of sense, but they happen. And you have to do some like basic, not always obvious puzzle solving along the way. Sometimes it's kind of like the worst aspects of adventure game puzzle solving along the way, where it's like, okay, what the fuck do you want me to do here? What is the exact order of operations that you are making me do, and like, why am I doing this stuff? Like, I don't understand. And some things I still don't understand, like why the man, like on the third or fourth screen, like you use a payphone to call a cab and you don't just take the cab home. Cause I thought for sure, like, oh, okay, well, I took the, you know, subway, or I was going to take this. I thought I was going to take the subway, and then I didn't take the subway. And now there's this cab here. It's right there. And I'm trying to get into the cab, and unable to. And I'm like, okay, I have different things to do, apparently. And apparently the thing you need to do is blow up the cab to distract one of the killer drones patrolling the area so that you can move along.
Yeah, that was,
I'm like, why would I think that's a thing that I needed to do and not just get inside of this cab? I have a job, clearly. I'm trying to get home from it. I must have currency. But you know, it's trying to hit home this feeling of oppressive, you know, my job sucks and now I have to make this trek home through this world that sucks and everything sucks sort of deal. And it's just kind of like, come on, guy. The biggest problem is, generally speaking, just playing it. Your dude moves so goddamn slow. He does not have a run button. He just kind of tippy toddles along.
I thought there was a run button.
I did not find a way to make this man run.
Maybe I'm thinking of a different game.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I was moving real slow.
Fire it up and check it quick.
You're a man with a Switch in front of you. My Switch is elsewhere, so. By default, you're moving pretty slow through these environs. But that's only part of the deal. It's sometimes the game is really fussy about just like you interacting with things. Maybe being not quite close enough to interact with them, or just not interacting with them quite the right way. The game does have to its credit, it has a guided mode where you can just like hold down one of the trigger buttons and it will point a line directly at what you need, where you need to go, I guess.
I thought that was pretty helpful.
That is really helpful. So like you can only get too, you know, you can't get too stuck with that there, but then it's like, you know, the game is just holding your hand all the way through.
Hold the right trigger.
Well, not all the way through. Is that running?
Yes.
Okay, my bad. besides the point. But yeah, your dude does is
he is slow, very slow. Even he running, is, he's slow.
Yeah, he's not super fast in any means. But so in like You get to points. So that I maybe how much of this game have you played, Joe? Not much.
I don't know. I played a couple chapters in. In some beast's stomach right now.
Wow. So like
I'm still very early in the game, I think.
Yeah, I got pretty early on. Like, there's this part where you have to march through a snowfield, and I just kept taking like a slight wrong turn and then dropping dead in the middle of the snowfield. And I'm like, what the fuck? Because then the game drops you back to the beginning of that chapter. And there's like, I think a little bit of a cutscene load in. Like, it's not like a super long one, but I'm just like, what the hell? Like, and, you know, I'm trying to follow my guideline, but it's like, if you were the experience I was having is just straying just a little bit from it was killing my ass dead. And there's a lot of ways throughout the game that you can kind of take a wrong turn and kill your ass dead. And it doesn't set you back tragically far. Like, the snowfield was about the worst instance of that in my experience. Usually, like,
checkpoints are very forgiving.
Yeah, checkpoints are very frequent. It's like there's a part where like in too early on, like areas where there's train tracks and then there's streets that you can't walk out into. And I think in both instances I was trying to pick up a coin or something like that, and I picked up the coin and then wandered into my death. But like, it set me back right to when I picked up the coin. So it's like every time you interact with something or move a puzzle forward, like it seems like every time you do something with a button press, it saves. It's just when you're, that snowfield part really did me some business. But yeah, it goes some places, but I found the environment and like, just kind of wandering around and looking at things to be cool. I didn't especially love like a lot of the storytelling, which, I alluded to some degree of pretension earlier in this show.
Yeah.
And even with like the guide thing, the guide thing is there to help you through, but on their own face value, there was a lot of puzzles that just
didn't make sense.
Didn't make sense in that horrible, old school adventure game sort of way where it's just like, you just can't wrap your head around what I'm sure the developers felt was very obvious or very clever. And you're just, in the end, you're just like, why would you blow up the taxi rather than just take it? And I get that's not the story here, but it's like, this is where my brain is going. Cause I don't know where the story's going yet. I'm just thinking, well, I have to get home. So why don't I take a cab? Why don't I do this? Why don't I do that? Why don't I have a plan for how to get home? I don't understand. It didn't really set my world on fire.
It's definitely going to be an acquired taste of a game. If this doesn't click with you, it's not going to click with you. I don't think if you played more than 10 minutes of this and you weren't feeling it, you're not going to really dig it. But if you're into those unique, odd, kind of out there experiences, unique.
And usually I am, but just not, I guess, in this.
Yeah. Well, it's only $15. What do you think?
No, I think, it's a try it because, some people are really, I think, going to dig it and fall into it. And some people are just going to be like, why am I playing this thing? And that's the divide. So,
And important to note, it is not on Xbox One or PS4. It is new gen and Switch only.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Huh. Not PC yet. That's weird.
Yeah, PC.
Okay.
PS5, Series X and S, and Switch.
Gotcha. Yeah. So it's, maybe a wait for a sale, but be wary. it's not something that just everyone's going to be able to dive into and enjoy, I don't think.
All right. Well, that's it for you. I guess we'll let you get going.
All right. Sounds great. I'll be back next week with Nickelodeon All-Stars and that Sheep game.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear about Nick All-Stars.
Yeah, hopefully.
I want to hear about the Sheep game.
Well, both of your dreams will be fulfilled next week.
Stay tuned, kids. Podcast.
Stay tuned. and I guess for the rest of the reviews on this show, too.
Hang on. Yeah, there's some good stuff, I guess.
Maybe.
Maybe. We'll find out.
We'll see. Yeah. All right. Good night.
Take it easy. Next game to talk about is Instant Sports Paradise, developed by Breakfast Games, published by PID Games and Just for Games. Released September 1st on Switch and PS4 for $34.99. Summer is here. Well, summer was here. With friends and family, Instant Sports Paradise takes you overseas under the sun of a paradise island. Share a multitude of sporty and fun experiences without leaving your home. Chris, tell us about Instant Sports Paradise.
Well, just in time for summer. we got Instant Sports Paradise. Well, it does take place in French Polynesia, so it's possible that they are still experiencing sunny weather. I actually don't know what the climate is there at the moment, so, you know, hey, whatever. So, yeah, in this game, you play as one of a handful of children.
It is presently 84 and rainy.
Okay, that's actually what it was here in Texas. That's wow, Texas is like French Polynesia right now. Okay, great.
Also 4 in the afternoon there.
Oh, okay, this is slightly... Wait, really? Only French 5 Polynesia. Hours difference? Okay. Anyway, no, that does make sense. So you play as one of a bunch of kids, and what I like already out of the gate is that the kids are a nice wide swath of diversity. So we've got plenty of kids represented in this game, which is very cool. It's up to 4 players, and it seems like the 4 players probably get to venture around the island as well. Like, I didn't get to play this multiplayer, so full disclosure here, but it's not super necessary to do that. But this is an up to 4 player game. Local, of course.
Yeah.
So you get to run around this little island, and an island that you get like this tiny map that you can access that kind of like tells you what all the where the games are. Like, you have to walk to the games. Little else. It's so hard to see this map if you're in portable mode, that is to say. And actually, but I shouldn't go too much into that because I didn't knock Astria Ascending for its tiny ass text. That's just the way some games are. I don't know. Stop making tiny text on Switch games, people. There's no reason for it. Anyways, so here's the thing, though, is that they do provide you, like, anytime there's, like, a map standing, like a you are here kind of mall map, or I guess resort map. I had never been to a resort, so I only assume that that's authentic. You can choose to teleport directly to any of the games you want to play. So, actually, there's a game menu, however, you know, a mini game menu, but it's, like, it's tucked away in the actual game, the hub, as it were. And so there you can play, let's see here, 12 different games. And if you can master those games, then you get to unlock other parts of the island where you can learn history and purchase things with the money that you win from these mini games and whatnot. I haven't unlocked them all, so.
Actually, there's 15 mini games, it says on the store page. So.
Yeah, some of them are unlocked. There's only 12 to start. And actually, 2 of those are food preparation. So I think they're trying to fool these kids into getting some free labor, if you know what I mean. Like the first slave 2 games.
Labor's always fun.
I know, right? Oh, no, I mean, again, and because this actually does give you a little bit of Tahitian, like, history and, like, you know, French Polynesia, a little bit of, like, factoids here and there. It's just, like, walking around this thing, because I picked the white kid, because, you know, whatever, he was the first one. And so this whole time I'm running around and I'm like, don't think about colonialism. Don't think about colonialism. we're having a good time. Anyways.
Oh, God.
So, the first 2 games are Ice Creams, which is ludicrous, and also Wok, W-O-K, which is great because each game has a difficulty, 3 difficulty settings that you unlock by playing the previous one. So you have to play it on easy, then you play it normal, then you play it hard. So this does have a game that is Wok Hard.
Oh, so. Jesus fucking Christ.
It does, though. It is in here. Anyway, Ice Creams is great because it's like you have to stack up these ice cream cones with like different colors of scoops that are represented as, you know, on the face control or the controller face buttons. And they're like you know, when the game gets hard, they're going up like 7 high, and I'm like, who is ordering a 7-scoop ice cream cone that's like alternating orange and black, but with a blue one on top? You know, it's like, holy jeez. The walk game is incredible because the walk game is incredible because what you do is, so you can either play this again in handheld mode, or you can use the Joy-Cons to do both motion controls and just standard controls, as well as a pro controller if you wish. And but the walk game, it uses the gyro controller you're supposed to tilt to heat up the food in the pan that it drops in, and then flip it. And the faster you can like kind of turn it, then the hotter it'll get, and then you know you have to flip it before it burns. And then once you're done, like whatever food is left in the wok, you're given points for, right? And you try to get the most points. So it's hilarious because you're sitting here dropping food everywhere. It's just dropping out of the pan, and then like at the end they're like, oh, good enough, he left one shrimp in there. That's 1 point. What do you expect? He's 8 years old. Anyway,
kids.
Stupid kids. And then there's like some games that are like wakeboard and wingsuit, where you're just going through like a kind of level, and wakeboard is like where you're trying to do stunts, like being pulled behind a boat, and you know, you get a nice jump off of a ramp and like just kind of mash buttons until you get like enough points. It was actually hard for me, so I stopped playing it. And wingsuit is kind of like the same thing, except you're free flying, which is not how wingsuits work, but you're basically free flying and trying to pick up coins. Jet ski, also you're riding a jet ski trying to pick up coins. There's like a shell hunt where you try to pick up shells, and if you can collect like a big, medium, large, or small, medium, large, if you will. Like, shout out to this podcast 8 years ago. But if you collect like the small, medium, large of your these different shells, you get bonus points, but you get points regardless, and things like that. So it goes on. There's also an archery game, which, because, you know, what better to give an 8-year-old kid but a real bow and arrow? Which, by the way, is not the most dangerous thing here. But anyways, it's like, you get to shoot these arrows, but the obstacle is the fact that the wind is blowing like up to 40 miles an hour.
Jesus, and at one point, are you in a hurricane?
Yeah. At one point, in hard mode, because I was like, I was getting into this archery thing, right? Because it's like you have to overcorrect for, or you have to, you know, correct yourself for the wind. And so I was like, okay, well, I play Skyrim, I know how to do this. And sure enough, I did really well. But like when I got to the last, like the hard mode, winds picked up to 59 miles an hour. I was like, this kid does not need to be out here shooting arrows.
Jesus. No, the
most dangerous game by far is flying a freaking seaplane.
An 8-year-old flying a plane.
Yeah. And then after that in the list, I kid you not, is table tennis. And it's not even proper table tennis. What you're doing is you're bouncing a ball on a table tennis paddle, but you have to turn the paddle with the button when the ball comes down into as a different color. So if it's coming down black, you got to be on the black side. If it's coming down red, you got to be on the red side to get points. It's ridiculous and weird. And then there's mini golf that's impossible, and the bowling is not good.
Ah, that's a bummer.
And air hockey you can play by yourself, which is the saddest thing I've ever heard of. So naturally, I played that one for like an hour.
Nice.
So like that's your starting set of games. There's lots of games to play. Now, some of them are fun, but some of them are like kind of more like fun despite themselves, because they're not super like properly like, you know, really engaging. They're just more like these kind of loose ideas of games. But there is gameplay there, so I'm not really complaining about that. The one thing that I really, really want to complain about is the overall frame rate of the game, which is like 20.
Oh, no.
It's at its fastest, your character is just moving like real choppy, like especially around that world map. I can only imagine what happens if you put 3 more players in there. Maybe they intentionally like made it that bad so that it would look the same when 4 players are in there. I don't know. But yeah, like the idea of the game is great. It definitely has a little bit of weakness in the execution, especially for like the graphics and stuff. And plus, it's real easy to just wander aimlessly on this island and never find anything to do. Like, you know, you can find your some people that'll give you like one sentence of like dialogue and stuff, but it's like it's not really lined up like properly. They talked about how there's like three stores on the island and I can only find one and you can't teleport to them. So I found the clothing store and I bought like clothing. I turned my kid into a French Polynesian goth.
Nice. So
that was fun to do.
Well, the game's $35. What are you thinking of it?
Well, I know it's $35 because there's a physical version coming out too, and $35 is like kind of cheap for a physical new game on the Switch. So, you know, in that sense, if you're planning on buying it physically, then, you know, that's not too bad of a price. But honestly, for $35, I would maybe see if like the PlayStation version is smoother, you know, because I honestly think that performance issues are going to kill this one more than it being like, you know, substandard or anything, because it's fun. Like, these games are fun, even if they're not like what you're used to, except for bowling. I did not like the bowling game. Sorry, but you guys need to, you know, bowling games all have the exact same controls for a reason, and y'all need to, you need to respect that. Yeah. But no, it's like, it's a try it at $35, to be honest. And like I said, I would look at the other systems and see if there may be better performers in terms of like, yeah, just frame rate and stuff like that, because that can really bump some people out.
Cool. All right. Well, next game to talk about is Phoenix Point Behemoth Edition, developed by Saber Minsk, published by Snapshot Games, released October 1st on Xbox One and PS4 for $39.99. Phoenix Point puts the player in the midst of a desperate fight to take back the Earth from a mutating alien menace. Featuring turn-based tactical combat and resource management on a global scale, Phoenix Point offers endless replayability and a brutal challenge. Purnell, tell us about Phoenix Point.
It's fucking brutal. full disclosure here, this isn't my usual game as far as skill level goes. So as you can probably surmise, yeah, I got wrecked. So I'm going to talk about this as far as like a features thing go, not as I'm a badass gamer's, you know, description. So Phoenix Point is a game that falls into the school of thought crafted originally by the XCOM franchise. Though apparently, from what I was reading, this was created in part by one of the originators of XCOM, which in and of itself speaks volumes for the product here. You play as a troop of people related to an organization called Phoenix Point, and your goal is to essentially take back the Earth from a weird phenomenon where humans are melding with fish and an alien parasite to create these really cool hybrid critters, actually. They resulted in the downfall of civilization, and now you're trying to, you know, eradicate them and bring it back. The way this is done, however, is by taking up base at Phoenix Point HQ and slowly expanding out into the global, you know, the world as a whole, to fulfill missions, both optional and story mandatory, to pull this off. Now, the way gameplay works, however, is where it gets wacky-tacky and meaty-grindy. So, at the base itself, you have tons of options for customization as far as, like, building structures that can be utilized to, like, heal units and manufacture weaponry and research information to basically build your team up. And you do this by utilizing resources that are gained on, you know, recon missions. Recon is done by scanning the globe for places that are of interest, flying a team there, hoping you don't get ambushed on the way, and then going downtown to fulfill one of the many options of missions that you have. It could be like, you know, resource scavenging. It could be kill all adversaries. It could be protect people, any number of things like that. And you'll basically do those things. Now, the actual combat, though, that's the part that's actually both really awesome and also equally rough, because, again, the game is not easy on any scale. Like, there's no aspect of this game that's easy. So, in combat, you can pretty much have up to, like, 5 or so units on the field. They come in a variety of different classes, like your usual snipers, your soldier types. You have units that can like use like psychic abilities, and basically, you know, like brawler types. It's surprisingly diverse for what they give you. And you can pretty much run around, take cover behind things. But when it's time to get grum, you know, get down to business, as in pew-pew, shooting at enemies, the game takes an interesting turn. You get to do a zoom-in. So basically, you'll say you're cucked against a wall. And that's weird because I just realized I'm actually doing that physically here. You tuck yourself against the wall, and you say, I'm going to attack that unit over there. If you have the line of sight, the game will switch to the first person view or over the shoulder sort of to try to line up your shot. It'll give you an immediate, but you can hit the trigger again to do a more zoomed in shot that shows you like a accuracy ring. And the more of the body part that's in the center circle, the more likely you are to hit it. You can also use this to to disable various body parts, to weaken enemies and remove access to abilities and such. But if you have another unit in front of it, you run the risk of shooting that unit, so don't do that. Also, it's surprisingly easy for your cover to get in the way of your shot, not to mention just random objects. So it's not a simple matter of, he's there, I'm going to kill him, because that might not necessarily happen for you. All of these things take action points, as these games do with this sort of thing. So you have to be careful. But there's also willpower. Willpower being like an MP stat of sorts that is used for special skills. But if you run out of willpower in the map itself, you will go into a panic state and just do dumb shit, potentially killing yourself or getting yourself killed. So there's an interesting management system of like, okay, I want to use willpower to dash across the map, but I want to overdo it or else. And you're doing this across all of your units. They all have willpower and the like. You're going to die a lot. And when you do, you'll just pretty much ultimately want to try again, because in addition to just like battles, there's other aspects of management too. You have to manage each individual unit's like skill gains, to earn from leveling up, all their equipment, which you gain from research and through purchasing with supplies and manufacture. But there are also these various organizations, groups, factions in the game that you come across fairly early on. And as you play the game, you have to take on missions, as I mentioned, when you scan the map and all that. And those missions could have affiliation ties with one of the factions, sometimes putting them in direct conflict with each other, meaning that if you support one, you pretty much hurt yourself in forms of the other. And there's like this weird management of balance where you have to make sure you don't piss off one faction too much, because that will result in potential retaliation, whether it's them attacking each other or attacking you at your base or just whatever. There's a lot to deal with here, and I barely scratched it because I freaking suck at this. But what I can say about it is that the gameplay is extremely engaging. However, that comes at a cost, in that there is a stupid amount of management that you have to do as the player to get the most out of this game. If you're the type that wants to boot up a game and just kind of run through it, like we talked about Fort Triumph a week or so ago, which is XCOM-esque too, Fort Triumph is light years lighter than this game, as in that's closer to a game you just kind of pick up and play and just like putz around if you just want some XCOM, some quick and light XCOM. This game, this ain't quick and light. This is hard and dirty. You're going to play this game. You're going to spend hours managing your units, and you might not even succeed. Though one benefit to that is that they do give you restart map options, so that does help with dealing with, you know, aspects of things like that. So it is definitely a game that I could recommend to folks that are in this genre, because it's done well. It's not perfect as far as, you know, like graphics and performance and all that goes, but it functions enough that everything that they're giving you is worth dealing with the, you know, not picture perfect graphic style and stuff like that. It's just be ready to work your ass off and micromanage a number of facets as opposed to just like getting down and saving the earth.
Well, there's a couple of options for this game. The one we're covering is the Behemoth Edition for $40. That includes the base game as well as four expansions and some other goodies there for $40. What do you think of it?
Well, if there's a base cost of 40 and you're getting extra goods, I'd say it's a solid buy. I thought you was about to say you can buy it without those bonus goods. And I might say you might want to do thing that is, first.
The base game by itself is still 60.
So the bigger, more meaty package is cheaper.
It's $20 cheaper, yes.
Oh, fuck. I don't know how they got that through the... There's more.
It's on Game Pass.
Wait. Oh, so just play the fucker.
So if you have Game Pass, you could buy the Behemoth Edition for $32.
Yeah, that just makes it pretty straightforward and easy. And since it's on Game Pass, you can give it a gnarly go as well. But yeah, I think it's a good buy, especially at that price for what they're giving you. Many people that buy this game probably won't even get through it because there's a lot going on here. But I believe you'll get the time out of it that says this is worth the money.
Cool. All right, one final game to talk about tonight is called The Handler of Dragons, developed by high-quality Jerzy Kalinski, published by Golden Egg Studio, released September 27th on Steam Early Access for $11.99. In the RPG game, The Handler of Dragons, you play as a warrior who could speak to the dragons. How did it happen? What will be the consequences? Are you going to protect dragons at all costs? How far will you go to obtain their power? The adventure begins. Chris, that's a lot of questions. Tell us about this game.
I don't know if I got time to answer all those questions. Okay, so The Handler of Dragons is a really interesting one. This is one of those games that comes along every once in a while where it's ambitious. It's a fully 3D. It looks like a sandbox RPG, but it's not because it operates in chapters, and each setting is a chapter. You can go forwards, but you cannot go backwards. Therefore, if you're in chapter town, I don't know how many chapters in is the first town where you can actually buy stuff. But if you don't buy stuff in that town and you move on to the next area, you're stuck in that next area. You also can't save when you want. It only saves at the beginning of a chapter, quote unquote. So that's already it operates differently than the sandbox RPG, but it's a fully 3D thing. Third person hack and slash, I guess you could call it. But you know, it is an RPG, gain levels and things like that. And it was made by one person. So one person made this entire game.
Damn.
It tells the story of a family man who definitely doesn't look at all like he comes from Fable, who is basically like, yeah, he's just trying to live his life, and then he gets kind of caught up in this whole, I guess there's a wizard who is trying to save these dragons, and there's this evil sorceress who's trying to enslave them, and they both kind of show up in your front yard at some point. So you're basically... Because you can actually speak to dragons, like, you know, with actual words, you're kind of like the chosen handler of the dragons, and therefore you have to go and, like, basically, it gives you the option to be like, do you want to, like, you know, because you're supposed to find the first scale of each dragon you come across, which is, like, I guess the first scale that gets shed when they're, like, little dragons, so they're, like, kind of jewels, or they look like jewels, and, they're apparently really easy to steal, but they do contain the life force of the dragon. So it's kind of like you have to go and save those. Conveniently, you have to go save those scales from the nearby whoever took them. And then you have the choice of saying screw the dragon and giving yourself the power of that scale. I didn't try that because that's kind of like the asshole route. And this game definitely only has two routes. It's like you can either be total good guy or total asshole in the dialogue options. So, you know, I tend to be the lawful good first time through, and then like I might try the evil options later just for a larf. And you know. The game is awkwardly written. I believe that this one person is not like a native English speaker, but that doesn't really matter because what's really off is the voice acting. So at first I was like, I have never heard voice acting this bad. It was like the kid would be like, thank you for saving me, daddy. I love you. Do not worry about, you know, like, so like robotic and like weird, like it would go up and down kind of randomly, and I was like, what kind of line reading is this? So I actually did some digging, found that the developer themselves like actually answered a Steam review, a negative Steam review about this game, because you know, this person actually, this is a labor of love, by the way. This isn't a Gilson B. Pontes jam. This is like the anti-Gilson. But this is a person trying. This is good, at least in intention.
Yeah,
we'll find out if it's good in execution at the end of this review. But anyways,
tuned, kids.
Yeah. So I found out from straight from the fingers of the developer themselves that all the voice acting, because this is a one person operation and voice acting is expensive, and or you have to have a lot of friends who will put in the free labor for you. The voice acting is actually done by an AI generator. So it's a robot doing like all the voice acting in this game. And
I think SML could jump in here and all of us can voice act this game.
Let's do it. I'll be the kid. Thank you, Father, for saving me. I love you. Anyway.
Don't worry, son. It is okay, I guess. Don't die.
Now, here's the thing. Yeah, exactly. You can turn off the voices if this offends you. However, I would recommend not doing that because it's hilarious. This is the kind of game that you're going to boot up when friends are over and be like, okay, look at this. I'm fully planning on streaming this game soon, by the way, because this is too good. So, you know, there's awkwardness here. There's little obstacles that come from this being a one-player game, but there's a lot of heart in there. It's ambitiously written. Like, it has a real story. It has real, like, you know, you actually know why you're going, where you're going, and for what reason. And it's the structure of its setup where, you know, you find a dragon and you have a choice to make. And I will say the difficulty, like, it has a pretty good leveling system. So when you level up, you get points that you can use to unlock kind of facets of... there's like four different classes of things you can unlock. So like you can unlock stuff that makes your attacks better. You can unlock stuff that makes your magic better. And some stuff that like gives you general like goodness, like more health and things like that. And you unlock them if you have enough points. But instead of it being a straight up skill tree, it's like this kind of inventory where you drag and drop those aspects into the inventory to add them to your character. And you can take them back off. So you can unlock all these different things and then use them to customize your character further. It's a little, it's like maybe one too many steps in the abstraction of character building, but I like the idea and it works. So I'm all for it. Except that I couldn't get there's a life regen aspect that once I equipped it, it just didn't do anything. So I'm like, there might be some bug work to do here. And then my other major complaint is that it purports to have controller support, but I could never get my controller to work with it. So, as like, it didn't even read a single input from my controller. So I think there's something up there. So that's this game's got some work to do still before I would consider it like a fully fledged release. But honestly, at the end of the day, I was charmed by this project that's you know just one person strong, and you know. What I also find charming in it's inside the game and it's outside the game. This guy really loves dragons. Like in all of the things that they've put out there on Steam, it's like, you know, thank you for, you know, enjoying this project and the dragons. And like the first like bullet point of the game, like in the Steam page's description is dragons in all caps. So I appreciate this person who's out there that loves dragons so much that he wanted to make a game about helping them.
Well, so, on a scale of buy it, try it, deny it, or dragons, what do you give this one?
Dragons! No, but yeah, to be serious, if you can, I say buy it if you want to support a project that's got a lot of heart in it, but it does have like some bugs and some, you know, some things that need to be fixed here and there. It is engaging. It's pretty fun. It gets hard. It actually gets pretty tough, but not, again, it's not like freaking Gilson B. Ponta's die in one hit kind of stuff. Like it's not insurmountable, but I do think that there's some stuff that needs to like happen. For instance, the ability to go back a chapter or at least warn the player that they're about to like get into a place where they aren't going to be able to buy items or something, you know, like, because otherwise you have to start the entire game over because there's no other way. So, you know, like there's different little things like that that are a little too quirky and I think could be reined back. So officially I'm going to say for everyone, it's a try it. But, for those who like want to play a game that's like buggy but cool and also has like hilarious voice acting, at least at this time until we get a hold of them
until we make it worse
yeah, then this game's going to be a fun one to show
father,
your friends.
How are you?
Yeah, just
I'm
wait.
Good, son. How are you today?
That actually is almost exactly how it is.
Hello, some of it's, son. How are you today?
So yeah, dragons.
Dragons. All right. That's it for this episode. Made it through another one. Obviously, with all of the Metroid Dread talk that we had for music this episode, we're going to play some from Animal Crossing. Does anyone have any final words?
Also, Kirby's Dream Band this year put out a 2-song EP about Glaylancer, if you want.
Really?
So, yeah, it's really good. I'll link it in the chat.
Nice.
But the final words are... Dragons!